Okay. It's going to be okay. Gonna be okay. Well, I have a whole bunch of things on my mind. Big surprise, right? And there are great mysteries, like when the book is right side up, it's mostly easier to read. There was another one I was going to reveal, and now it's escaped me for the moment. So, I'm trying to figure out where to start. So, I'm going to pray. That's the place to start. Pray with me, please. Dear Father, I thank you for your great love for humanity and your great love for each individual in this room. I thank you that you loved Noah and that you loved Abraham and that you chose the people you formed from Abraham, but I thank you that Abraham is the father of all those who believe without circumcision because you counted him righteous before circumcision. And the father of those who are righteous in the circumcision because he was also righteous after receiving circumcision. And I thank you that you made promises to him that extend to all of humanity. And I just ask you, Lord, for your help for everyone, individual, denominational, cultural, national, to figure out that there's no competition for your love or redemption, that you did it in the way you did it because of your love for all humanity. And just help us, Lord, to orient ourselves according to the truth. And I just ask you for your help right now in Yeshua's name. Amaru. So I think I'll just I want to make one comment. I said something about us being old, my wife and I, so that's why we could, you know, stay places late and everything. There are various reasons why a person can do something when they would be tired. You sometimes can choose to just do something no matter how tired you are, although there is a level of tiredness which will actually tell you at some point, no, you are not going to do anymore. Passing out is a sign of that at times. But I want to... my comment about being old could have been perhaps an insensitive one. I don't know how many heard it. But I just want to say I deeply appreciate the time anybody that came spent. And I realize that for people who are in graduate school and people who have to get up and go and teach kids that are not easy to deal with, and people that have to get up and teach kids that might be easier to deal with, some of them pregnant. You know, it's a sacrifice. It takes energy, and we don't all have the same level of energy all the time. So what I want to say is thank you for being there. every time you were, and express no criticism whatsoever for whatever actual limitations are placed on any of our energy. I don't want to be part of that. I can easily do that. I can slip into it. I can say things that are quite unhelpful. I don't want that to be what comes from me, ever. And I just want to make sure that I want to encourage people, not discourage them. I want to acknowledge what they did, not talk to them about what they didn't do. There may be times where such things have to come up for all of us, but you understand what I mean. So I thank you all for your efforts. I will just mention that there are many, many times when I've felt so tired, sometimes kind of wanting to do the thing that was at hand, but still so tired and almost feeling like just not doing it, even wondering if maybe I should just not do some things sometimes. And I recall times where two congregations had meetings in this building. There'd been a move of God that had happened. I don't remember how many days a week in the beginning, 4 days a week. I came out here every night to do nothing but pray for people. And, some days I was mowing lawn, sinking fence posts, all kinds of things. I was tired, and during that time, I would come here. I mean, I went no matter what I felt like. And sometimes I was just dog tired. I didn't even know how I could drag myself over here. Yeah. And what happened was, I would just, there were people from all over that were just coming here, and I would pray for them. And I mean, the Lord just gave me what to pray for them. My favorite was pray for people that had no idea who they were, where they came from, or what they needed. Because the thing is, then, you don't have to play that head game of. By the way, when you pray for people, be careful you don't just concoct something based on what you think you know about them. Because there's a bunch of stuff you don't know about them, even if they're your kids. And, the Lord might have something he wants to stir in you that doesn't have to do with your own mind and your own thinking and his thoughts that aren't yours. And it's easier to do that when you know nothing about somebody, because you don't have to struggle with what you know. You can struggle with what you think you're sensing about the person with your own head, but it's much narrower. It's a much smaller thing. But I would just pray for people. And what would happen was, as I prayed, no longer I prayed for people, I just felt like I was just filled with energy. I would come home, it was pretty late, and I would just feel like I was ready to go. I mean, some of you may know that the first 48 years of my life in particular, I woke up feeling like a certain word Becky doesn't like to hear said out loud. It's not the one you're thinking of. It's milder. But just really feeling lousy. It's just how I felt. I mean, some of it perhaps was nothing but emotional, but I think some of it was neurological. It took me a long time to get going. I had to struggle. And just push myself, whether it was in school or whether I was working, welding, the first few hours, I just have to kind of just push myself, and then I'd kind of catch my wind. That's just the way it was. I mean, I don't know whether it needed to be that way that long. I sometimes wonder about things people struggle with and why. And I am sure that no matter what, even if some of them shouldn't have been that way, the Lord does take and use them for something and bring something out of them. Even if from your own doing you struggled with something for 30 years and then got through it, I'm telling you, the Lord uses that thing in you. And it does one thing, by the way. It helps you understand people that have such struggles, because people that have never struggled with certain things at all sometimes just... they come along with their good intentions and their platitudes, and they just bang somebody on the head until, until they're just like driven right into the ground, and then they walk away feeling like they've done a good deed. I mean, I've done it. We all do it, I think, probably some of the time. We need to be careful. Anyway, so thing is, we all have to decide what to do, what to be at, and that's between us. It's a matter of conscience sometimes. It's not always for anybody else to tell you anything about. But you can know in your own heart and mind, and then rest with whether you need to just stay home and rest, or whether you need to go do more than you thought you could do for longer than you thought you should, and Lord just fills you up. And sometimes it's also all right to just really get tired out doing what you think you should do and then try to get some rest. My son did point out to me that on, you know, Thursday morning, I could sleep in. It's true. You know, if I'm really wiped out and I stayed over at Bard late, I could probably sleep longer than some of you because I don't necessarily, you know, I don't have to be over at the Kingston Children's Home or at a class at Bard or whatever. So, you know, we all have to decide based on sound reasoning and ask the Lord what he's asking of us. But I thank you for all of you, for everything that you have done for all of these years from the beginning of this until now. I appreciate it, and I know the Lord does too. So, yeah, moving on. So, by the way, one of the things I kind of felt like not going to, and I think I was considering not going. Fortunately, I spoke to my wife on the phone while I was in Sam's Club, and then the just absolute absurd impossibility of me not going to the Yom HaShoah observance vanished. You know, it was like, what was I even thinking? I don't know how many years I've been going to those. I don't think I've missed one in, could it be 30 years? So, but I really didn't feel like going. I was tired. I had done a lot. I mean, I'd done a bunch of physical work and a bunch of other things. I was tired. And but I went, and it was really interesting experience. I think it may have been the best one I was ever at. It seemed more cohesive than perhaps anyone that I can recall. And there are parts of this that I might not want recorded, if this is all being recorded. But there were at least three rabbis there. Anyway, the importance of connecting to the Jewish community and actually being part of it is so huge. And one of the biggest things that would go against really really being that is a lack of energy and distraction and, in some cases, perhaps priorities that are out of whack. But the thing is, it's difficult. It's difficult to be really engaged and involved with some things over the long haul a lot of the time. But I think while I was there, see, this desire to have a building doesn't go away. My wife and I have both had it for a long time. We haven't necessarily had it in the same way or exactly at the same time all the time. But more and more, I just would really like to have a building. And the way to approach whether or not to have a building isn't by listing all the drawbacks and problems and complications that a building brings in to reality. Because if that's what it was about, well, I mean, you know, there are, how many things are there that we would have just chosen not to do at all in life? Certainly not get married. Certainly not have kids. I mean, kids take a lot of work. don't have them. And you know, I remember, was it a jungle gym? The more you have, the more you have, the more you have to take care of the things you have. And which is kind of a little bit of a thing about becoming enslaved to all of your possessions, which you have to take care of, and then you have to buy things to take care of them with. And in some cases, you need to buy things to take care of the things that you use to take care of the other things, you know. And part of that is perfectly legitimate, but it can get so out of whack that we're so enslaved to our stuff that we're just consumed. So anyway, one of the things about a building, my wife said we were going to buy a building. Unless they give it to us. I have a question for you now. Can you see anything on this piece of paper? What? I mean, can anybody see anything on it? Okay, I guess the answer is no. There is something on this piece of paper. And I'm going to tell you that I did a rough calculation, by the way. We have a building fund. And I'm going to tell you it's huge. And what I mean by huge is not altered by what I'm about to say, which is, I don't know if I can even state it correctly, so I'm just gonna say, where did I write it down? We have 0.0001% roughly of the purchase price for the building that we're talking about. If you take 60 times, if you take 0.00001 times 60, you'll have a figure that's around the purchase price of the building that we're talking about. In other words, what we have is less than 1/600,000th of the purchase price. What? If you take 600,000 times 0.0001, I don't know if I can even say it correctly now. Approximately, yeah. So we have 0.0001%, and as you said that you didn't see anything on this sheet of paper. Well, you know, the scriptures say that mustard seeds are small, and the dot on this piece of paper is bigger than some mustard seeds and smaller than some others, because they don't all have the same size seeds. Some of them are quite tiny. Some of them are a little bit bigger from my perspective. But if you can't see that dot there, then you could just say, I can't see it and there is nothing on it. There is no dot there. And that just proves that any of us can say whatever we want to say. But the dot is there. And if you have the faith of a mustard seed, I've been thinking about that my whole life. What does that mean, the faith like the size of a mustard seed? What does that mean?
It means mustard seeds have faith. So you gotta
Well, the passages that talk about it do say that, you know, you sow it, and then it grows up and becomes like a tree, and the birds of the field come and make nests in it. Now, the mustard plants that you've looked at might not be such, but you may also not know that wild lettuce can get like 12 to 14 feet tall. I used to just let them grow. So did my old friend Jane Hansen over at the farm, rather than weed them, just because I wanted to see how big they would get. And so I sometimes just think, what that's talking about is if you have faith, then that's enough. You can, it'll grow into a tree that all the souls in the world that need a place to come and nest could come to. Ultimately, that's what it means. But the point being that a mustard seed doesn't seem like much of anything. And Yeshua uses it as an example of what great big things can come out of. And so if you have faith as much as that, then basically, well, you can do anything. It's pretty much what he says. So with that, I'm going to turn to, as I peruse my detailed and organized notes here, some place in this book. Where did I write it? I found it. Okay, in 1 Kings chapter 18, too much of it to you. Well, I do. I want to read a whole bunch of it to you. But, this is when Elijah and the prophets of Baal, you know, get together and do the thing with the water and the sacrifice and all that. And but part I want to read is right after that, starting at the 41st verse. And Elijah said to Ahab, And Elijah said to Ahab, go up, eat and drink, for there is a sound of the rushing rain. Do you think Ahab heard the sound of rushing rain when Elijah said that? I don't either. Do you think Elijah heard the sound of rushing rain when he said that? So Ahab went up to eat and drink, and Elijah went up to the top of Mount Carmel. And he bowed himself down on the earth and put his face between his knees. And he said to his servant, go up now, look towards the sea. It hadn't rained for a long time. Anybody know how long?
3 years.
And you know why it didn't rain, according to the scripture? What? You and then her. Okay, and what did you say? Well, there's certainly a relationship. But Elijah prayed that it wouldn't rain. And it didn't rain for 3 years. And I know at least one younger conservative rabbi that blames Elijah for the drought. It's like, oh, great, prophet of Israel, that's just what we need. No rain for 3 years. Thank you.
At least he believes in the power of prayer.
Completely. Well, I'm not so sure, but anyway. Go up now, look towards the sea. And he went up and looked and said, there is nothing. And he said, go again. 7 times. And at the 7th time, he said, behold, a little cloud like a man's hand is rising from the sea. That made my scalp tingle. You ever get that? Almost like it's moving. It's like goosebumps running around. I'm not joking. So, if you saw a cloud the size of a man's hand rising from the sea, first of all, would you call it a cloud? Okay. So, and he said, Elijah says to his servant, after he saw this cloud the size of a man's hand, and he said, go up, say to Ahab, prepare your chariot and go down, lest the rain stop you. And in a little while, the heavens grew black with clouds and wind, and there was a great rain. And Ahab rode and went to Jezreel, and the hand of the Lord was on Elijah, and he gathered up his garments and ran before Ahab to the entrance of Jezreel. You ever wonder how fast he ran? I expect that the chariot was a little quicker than your average guy. So, who wants to be normal? Well, I have been trying to answer that question for most of my life.
Normal is in the eye of the beholder.
I'm going to suggest that normal is, I don't see a cloud. And normal is, it's not going to rain. And normal is, that little speck is not going to grow into any kind of a plant. And normal is, you know what? That sounds inconvenient. Sounds like a lot of trouble. Sounds like a lot of work. And besides, we don't have the money. That sounds normal. And I do have the building in mind, by the way, but that's not all I have in mind. And that is not the important part of what I'm talking about. The important part of what I'm talking about is really how we approach our walk with Yeshua, what we actually believe he can do in our life, what we believe we can accomplish through him or he can accomplish with us if he chooses to, and what we don't. And there are a whole bunch of religious and pious ways to place limitations on yourself and God that can look really good if they're properly explained and wearing the right clothes. The question is, really, what does God want on this day, in this instance, from me, in me? And then also, what does he want for and from us as a group? And what does he want to bring about through us? And the questions are the same, whether you're talking about getting a building or whether you're talking about getting up in the morning or whether you're talking about, well, maybe should I finally express God's love to that neighbor? It's crossed my mind now for 20 years. I wonder if I could get across the fence. I wonder if God can make a way. The door seems closed, but you know, I got to tell you, if your life is anything like mine, oftentimes there are a bunch of doors that don't look all that closed, and I may still not have gone through them. What does the Lord want? I do have a growing sense that just to talk about limitations, by the way. I could easily look at all of these questions in terms of the limitations and choke my own ability to even dream about it into nothing with no trouble at all. I wouldn't even need any help from anybody else. I could do that. I have the power. I could sometimes do it even better with a little help from my friends, as the song goes, you know. But the thing is, ultimately the question isn't about what I feel like we should have or what I think we should do or what I would just really like, you know. But what does God want? So The possibility of creating a what I would just refer to as Jewish space is something that I've really, really wanted to be able to do for a long time. And to have something that we could use when we wanted to, for what we want to, and for things that we have not been able to do, I would really like that. I would also like a place that, and this is kind of a mixed thing, but that might seem a more likely place for somebody who's curious and wondering, either Jewish or not, pagan, Jewish pagan, Norwegian Druid, to just come and visit, because it doesn't seem like the same old imposing church. And I'm not criticizing churches at all, by the way. I'm not intoning that in any way. And God can overcome those obstacles in places that are just plain churches, because the love of God in people can perform what God has for those people to do. But I'm talking about what he has for us to do. So, I'd also like it would be great to have a place where you could be standing outside on a quiet evening and talk to people and be heard and hear what they say. And most of the time, if I'm outside here, I can't hear what people are saying. The trucks and everything and the sound is just so loud. There are all kinds of things. It so happens that my wife noticed this place that's for sale. It's on 11 acres. It's called St. Joseph's Church Mission. Things pretty quiet there. It's got a stage. The sanctuary in the pictures just looks really beautiful. I think the building is in pretty good shape overall. And it's absolutely impractical and impossible for us to even give it a thought. You mean the council meeting? Yeah. You might remember the details. I brought it up, the desire for a building at our Tikkun council meeting in New City on Thursday.
What? When I was at the worship leader summit, after the guest speaker spoke in one session, he asked people to pray and just hear what God was speaking to them. And the word that came to me was building. And I did not know that God had basically been speaking to him that very same thing. And we hadn't had a chance to compare notes until we were at the Tikkun meeting, and he's bringing it up.
And then Grant Berry, some of you have met him. If you've met him, you probably won't forget him. I don't know if I even heard what he said, but he was at the council meeting. He said, what was it he said?
He said, when we were praying about it, he said, I have a word for you from the Lord. He said, the word is church.
Yeah, so St. Joseph's Mission Church seems to match that. I will tell you that just looking at the pictures, I was really drawn to it. My wife drove over there and drove around the place, and I haven't.
Real estate agent on
yeah.
The phone in the car.
I mean, this is the kind of thing we do. So we know people that have basically been given buildings. We know people that had impossible situations that wanted to have a synagogue, where there were powers that be would have stood in their way. So what I would ask you all to do is pray about it. The thing is, I know that my God owns the cattle on a thousand hills, and since I'm not a hermeneutical, you know, literalist, which that would mean he only owns the cattle on a thousand hills and somebody else owns all the rest of them in the world, he actually owns all the cattle in all the world, all the buildings, all the water, all the trees, all the land, and he owns the whole world. In truth, he owns all the money in all the banks, whether anybody really knows that or not. And so if he wants us to have a building or that building, he can bring it about. I probably won't get to what I was going to talk about today, but it doesn't matter. All right, well, actually, maybe it does. But I'll very quickly, you probably know this story about a time when I was with a guy named Jeff Kelly. He's taller than me, wider than me, and about 150 pounds heavier than me. Well, yeah, maybe. And I was with him and Eddie Santoro, and we were praying. And I was a lot more stopped up back then than I am now. I'm not completely unclogged, but I'm not like I was back then. And Jeff, he was kind of dramatic, and when he was praying, he would speak in the King's English, his own version of the King's English. And, you know, the grammar wasn't necessarily right, but it did sound like the King's English. And he came over, and he took, I don't know if he had a handkerchief, he picked up my feet, and he was, like, wiping off my shoes. And then he says, I can still hear it. Peter, shake your feet. And I didn't do anything. And he did it again. Peter, shake your feet. And I didn't do anything. Kind of reminds me of that thing, you know, here, take the arrows and, you know, whack the floor. Back, back, back. You know. Oh, man, if you would have really smacked it like seven times or so, it would have been a big, big victory, but now it's just going to be dinky. So, shake your feet. I didn't do anything. I don't know if it was later that day or if it was a couple days later. I had an old 1970 step-sided Chevy truck that I bought for $400, and the cap that was on it was worth more than the truck. And I used to tell people that the steering column was the only thing that held the cab on. I'd go around a corner and fast, and that cab would actually start lifting off of the frame, you know. I'm not joking. The true death trap. Anyway, I was driving along in that truck, and you know, I didn't vacuum it very often, like probably not once during the whole time I had it. There's a lot of dirt, dried dirt, you know, dust. And I just started stamping my feet inside the truck while the truck's rolling down the road, and that dust rose up in a cloud around me inside the cab. And you know, there are some things you can do later if you didn't do them when you should have. There are some things you can't, but it doesn't mean there's nothing left to do. And if the Lord has something for us in this, and I feel this peculiar sense of hopefulness about it, see? I don't feel any worry whatsoever. I'm not stressed. It's nothing. I think my wife and I both really feel drawn to the place in terms of a facility and the possibilities of what could be done in that place if we had it and what we could do that we can't do very well now. Just a lot. And so I want to ask you to pray about it, and I want you to think of the $60 or so we have as a huge amount of money, because you know how many mustard seeds you can buy for $60? A gram of a certain types of mustard seeds is just hundreds and hundreds of seeds. $60 is, $60 could be nothing, or it could be like all the money in the world. The rich man dumps a bunch of money in the coffers and thinks he's done something great, and Yeshua leads his disciples to see that the little widow with a couple of coins that didn't amount to anything dropped them in there, gave more than they did. And you know, I'm reminded that the disciples, this is in a, you know, subsequent to other things having happened already, saying, oh, well, we don't have any food. I mean, what are we going to do? He says, well, don't you remember? You know, that little bit of bread. And how many baskets did you gather up? Don't you remember? The thing is, I grew up believing those stories because they're true. But it's possible to grow up believing those stories without believing anything that looks like that can ever happen again. And then sometimes I actually question whether people that think that way really believe them. I'm not always sure. At any rate, what I want to do is I want to encourage all of you. Like I said, this isn't about a building per se. It's about what God can do, what we can do in the Lord, what he has for us. It's about what you could do tomorrow when you're someplace by yourself or with somebody you didn't even know you would meet or whatever. Or just praying someplace where nobody knows you're doing it. It's about everything. It's about what we are, not about physical things, but what we are in the Lord. So I see the possibilities of new things really developing, and this thing that we are, I would like the people that continue to build it to be able to also continue to build in a place that allows it to become something fuller. So I'm going to ask you to pray about that. And I do know, by the way, and I don't doubt this at all, the Lord could just hand us the money this afternoon or tomorrow morning. And I also know that sometimes whether or not that happens has to do with whether you believe it or not. So a cloud the size of a man's hand. Seeing is not believing, but believing is seeing. And mostly in this world, in our culture now, we've got it in the reverse. So, I don't know if I can resist the temptation here. We were talking a little bit about, I don't know, things about what the Messianic movement is, and, you know, Gentiles, Jews, all of that stuff. It's coming up this morning in our discussion. And, by the way, somebody bring me that box over there. I read you some things about the Midrash on Ruth Rabbah last week. I'm not sure how clear that was. The counting's already happened, but today is 14 days in the Omer.
Hallelujah.
And I'm counting it this year. It's not that I've never done anything with it. I am intentionally, consciously counting it. I am thinking about counting it the next day. I'm thinking about what happens when the count comes to the end. I'm thinking about the house being shaken and a greater harvest than the first one. And I'm thinking about romances, and I'm thinking about a young Moabite woman curling up at the feet of a guy in a threshing floor. It was in the threshing floor, wasn't it? And uncovering his feet. If Hollywood made real movies about real stories without throwing all that junk in, I mean, it's a thrilling story. And the older I get, the more thrilling it gets. But this is just amazing, and I am actually wondering how many people in the Messianic movement even know about it. I don't know that much about a lot of things. But this whole thing where the rabbis come up with this notion of the Moabite Messiah when they're deliberating over this book called Ruth. And it just knocks my socks off that the guy that wrote this book of Ephesians was a Pharisee. And it says, I'll read you part of it. The second chapter starts out about how, you know, by grace we've been saved, and it's whether we're Jewish or not Jewish, but I'll just start reading at the 11th verse. Therefore, remember that at one time you Gentiles in the flesh called the circumcision by what is called the uncircumcision, by what is called the circumcision, which is made in the flesh by hands. Remember that you were at that time separated from Messiah, alienated from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers to the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. But now in Messiah Yeshua, you who once were far off have been brought near by the blood of Messiah, for he himself is our peace, who has made us both one and has broken down in his flesh the dividing wall of hostility. I was going to read from the TLV and see what it says in this, but I'll just read this the way it goes. By abolishing the law of commandments and ordinances that he might create in himself one new man in place of the two, so making peace, and might reconcile us both to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility. So in Ephesians here we have Paul talking about Jews and Gentiles becoming one. And it's one new humanity. The rabbis of the Talmud believed in one new humanity, and they were looking for it. Whether they looked for it quite the right way or not, it's what they were looking for. And in the Midrash on Ruth Rabbah, I'm just going to read a little bit of this again. I just have to jump in where we're at. So it's about what Scripture has provided. It says, Scripture has provided everything but the main point. I'm not claiming that the main point isn't in Scripture, by the way. But these guys didn't believe in the apostolic writings either. Scripture has provided everything but the main point, the Moabite Messiah. But sages impose upon the whole their distinctive message, which is the priority of the Torah, the extraordinary power of the Torah to join the opposites. Messiah, utter outsider, into a single figure. And to accomplish this union of opposites through a woman, They didn't realize how much they knew. The femininity of Ruth seems to me to be critical to the whole, as critical to the whole as the Moabite origin. The two modes of the abnormal outsider as against Israelite woman, as against man, the two modes of the abnormal outsider as against Israelite woman as against man, therefore are invoked, and both for the same purpose, to show how through the Torah all things become one. That is the message of the document. And seen whole, the principal message to which all other messages prove peripheral. I have to say, I agree with what I hear that saying. And I believe it's the same thing Paul was writing about. And so, nobody needs to become something they weren't when they were born, other than a believer in Yeshua. There's a place for everyone, and it's Yeshua that the Jewish community needs to find its center and the fulfillment of its purpose. And I want to be a group of people that has the understanding and the sensitivity to have the conversation in a way that proves itself to be relevant to Jewish concerns, after all. And so, it's 14 days in the Omer. And I want to know, you don't have to answer, whether in your mind's eye you see a little cloud the size of a person's hand, and what you think it means. Lord, refresh our gratitude and awe at what you've done for us. And show us Yeshua, and lead us in all questions, great and small, and bless each person here, Lord, in Yeshua's name. Vishamru.